disaster. Don't you give up, don't you let away. Talking about a forever after. Don't you give up, don't you dare give in.
Greetings, our friends, clients, and listeners of Women's Rights in the Workplace show. Don't you dare give in. We're not giving in here, even though it's remaining most precarious out there. This is Jack Tuckner and Deborah O'Rell. Pleasure to be with you. It's an honor joining you at 5 p.m. Eastern Time on PRN.FM for the Women's Rights in the Workplace show. And we definitely need some more women's rights in the workplace. What would you say about that, Deb?
I second that.
You know, I'll tell you something. I'm a little bit upset today. It's a bit of a travesty. You know, some of us know women. Some of us respect and like women. Some of us are women. And I don't understand, and I will not understand for the rest of the time on this earth, how it is that we sort of all, you know, go blithely along while women, half of us, really more than half of us now in the workplace, earn less than boys do for equal work, for comparable work, for doing the same job. I mean, a lot less, because over the course of a career, a lifetime, a woman earns about $430,000 less than a man for doing the same exact job. $500,000 approximately can feed a family of four for 37 years. It gets me a bit upset. And I get emotional about it, and I'd like you to hear, you know, this is on the heels of a couple of days ago, last week, every single GOP Republican congressperson in the United States House of Representatives voted against the Paycheck Fairness Act. Okay, and I'd like you to hear, Giselle, if you could please, this is Congressman Barbara Mikulski talking about her response to being called too emotional about this issue of gender pay disparity. Barbara Mikulski.
To simply get a bill on the Senate floor, we have to vote on a motion to proceed on whether we're going to take it up. And because this is now going to require a 60-vote majority because of the invocation of this fog of filibuster, we can't even get to a majority vote on how to make sure women get equal pay for equal work. No wonder people are fed up with us. They wonder about us why, when all is said and done, why more gets said than gets done. We heard this morning the talk about the economy. You know, one way to help the economy is for people to make more money. Now, I'll tell you what I'm tired of hearing, that somehow or another we're too emotional when we talk. You know, when we raise an issue, we're too emotional. Well, I am emotional. I am so emotional about this. I am telling you, if we don't pass this bill, I'm so emotional, I'm going to press on. It brings tears to my eyes to know how women every single day are working so hard and are getting paid less. It makes me emotional to hear that. Then when I hear all of these phony reasons, some are mean and some are meaningless, I do get emotional. I get angry. I get outraged. I get volcanic. Now, there are those who say this is a lawyer's dream. It's not a lawyer's dream. It's a family's dream. Now, if they're afraid of lawsuits, they ought to follow the law. The best way not to have a lawsuit is to follow the law.
Amen, sister. Follow the law. How about that? There's a reason to be emotional.
Yeah.
You know what? If we were all a little bit more upset about this and not just saying, okay, well, there must be a reason for it, or maybe it's women's choice, there would be. Our economy would be in better shape if we had more demand. There'd be more demand if we raised wages. And being many households are now single-parent households, most run by women, if we raised the status of women and paid them more, there'd be more demand. It's straight Keynesian economics. So this is because every Republican now voted against. You know a Republican? If you know a Republican, you may want to ask them, how is it? Just try to defend that. You voted against paycheck fairness for women. For women. You just said, you know what? No, we don't really. It's not really necessary. It's not necessary. Do you think it would be necessary if it were paycheck fairness for men? You know, I always say, when if men could bear children, we would have a 6 month family medical leave act fully paid. Maybe it would be a year, right?
Exactly.
With a couple of vacations before and after.
Yes.
It's a no-brainer. So it's only it's girls. So you know what? Let them, they'll figure it out themselves. Let them ask their father for some money or their husband.
Right.
So, you know, this is.
And remember, we're coming on the heels of not that long ago, women were not allowed to vote. Women were not right. entitled
to own property.
Exactly.
Right. Well, we don't want to compare it to that. We, you know, you've come a long way, baby.
Baby.
The whole point is, though, that it's not really so much that, in fact, it's true a blink of an eye ago. You know, before, I mean, listen,
no, but
suffragists.
That's, but that's what men, you know, it's just one more topic after another, another issue after another issue, trying for women to be considered the equal.
Right, equal. How about that? How about that? You're my
pal.
All. You're my equal. How about we're walking through this planet together, and we actually bring maybe different strengths, different, you know, issues. We can sort of split up, even in a family. We can have sort of honest divisions of labor. But the notion of intrinsic equality, you know, sort of this comparability of worth.
Yeah.
And here we are still fighting for that. And the most important part, losing. We're losing this battle. So women just, again, lost. And there doesn't really ever seem to be an outcry. You don't really ever really see this on the corporate media. Nobody sort of talks about what, you know, just a, again, it's sort of just this, a travesty, a sort of a sham that you have a majority of now, and of course, this is that you need the 60 votes to be able to
get anything
passed,
right.
Filibustering. But every single GOP person who, again, they should be wearing NASCAR patches with the billionaire. You know what? Here's a question for our listeners. And by the way, if you wish to call in today, call us at 888-874-4888, 888-874-4888. We'd love to take your call. Here's a question. What, name a piece of legislation, one piece of legislation, and I know the answer because I heard this week on Tom Hartman, who has many more listeners than we do. The question was, what piece of legislation has any Republican put through, shepherded through the legislature, you know, introduced, said this is a good idea, got through, passed a law that benefited the working person, that benefited the middle class, that benefited the poor, that benefited anyone, any entity other than corporations and billionaires. Name one. Love to hear from you. You won't be able to come up with one except for a couple of feeble ones that may come out. You know, Eisenhower had a couple of Eisenhower shepherded through a couple of bills. But again, he wouldn't even be a Republican by today's standards. Right. So you won't come up with that. So, again, it just comes down to, we would be in a fairer world if we weren't constantly being opposed by money interests that are only thinking about the bottom line, not their wives, not their own daughters, because they don't really count in their worlds. If you're very wealthy, you'll just take care of them on the side, and you're not worried about whether or not your daughter needs to make minimum wage or is earning minimum wage if you're a U.S. congressperson or senator. She'll marry someone, that's right, and she could stay home barefoot and pregnant and bang out some babies. And that's also because now every senator, I think that the answer is, and you could tell me I'm wrong on this, they're all very wealthy. So if every representative and every senator, they're rich. And just like everyone in the corporate media, every talking head, they're all seven-figure folk, and they're all paid by the same sort of the corporate interests that are, they're few and far between now. You know, they're all the telecom industry is connected. Used to be 5,500 radio stations in this country in our lifetime. And now there are six. You know, it's all they're so huge that we sort of have this monopolistic, oligarchic, you know, plutocracy coming on. So it's a scary world. But let's, you know what? In just talking about equal pay for equal work, here's what I just thought we would discuss today. And we'll have guests in later weeks who will talk a little bit more in specifics about what we can do about it. Do you know that, what are the laws? Well, we have Title VII, which is the Civil Rights Act of 1964, says you can't discriminate against women in work in the terms of the conditions of the pay of their employment. So clearly, just based on, that's what the Republicans always say, we already have laws. You can't discriminate against women. So if a woman says, well, wait a minute, you're discriminating against me because you don't pay me as much as you pay other men, the employer says, well, that's not true. You have to, of course, prove that. And you won't know about that because employers actively discourage or prohibit the transparency still to this day.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, except that's right. On Equal Pay Day last Tuesday.
Well, I would. Yeah. The federal contractors.
What that was.
Obama signed in two important executive orders last week.
Mm-hmm.
The first one was that federal contractors, which are 25% of the employers of this country, employ 25% of the people, that they cannot retaliate for any employee who talks about how much they make,
mm-hmm.
who discusses compensation.
Right.
And the second, I just lost my train of thought. So the second one was couldn't retaliate and must make available compensation data,
mm-hmm.
so that it is easier for people to see what everybody else is making, because this comes back to the very first bill he signed when he became president in 2009, which was Lilly Ledbetter.
Right.
Which...
But let's talk about where Lilly Ledbetter came from. Lilly
yeah.
Ledbetter happened because, and let's, for those who don't know, there was, back in 1963, and I believe it was Lyndon Johnson, so not a Republican bill, who... proposed the Equal Pay Act. The Equal Pay Act of 1963 amended the Fair Labor Standards Act of 1938. And what the Equal Pay Act basically says, and it's sort of very complicated, that's why it's not so simple.
Mm-hmm.
In order to prove, here's what the actual language of the Equal Pay Act says. It doesn't just say, oh, if you're a woman, you need to make as much as men. The law itself says, Equal Pay Act, I'm sorry, I just lost it on my paper, that it bans the payment of differential wages to employees of the opposite sex within the employer's establishment for, quote, equal work on jobs the performance of which requires equal skill, effort, and responsibility, and which are performed under similar working conditions. Let me give that to you again, because it's so complicated even in the language of it, and then they make it even worse to try to prove. Equal work on jobs the performance of which requires equal skill and effort and responsibility, and which are performed under similar working conditions. So it sounds like, okay, you know, yeah, well, I do the same job as Joe.
Right.
So I should get. So here are the defenses. So here's, first of all, what an employer gets to say. And even if you allege this and make it out, you could say, yes, I have the same job title as Joe, I'm married, and you pay me a lot less than Joe. Then the employer gets to say, okay, that's true. But here's our defense. Number one, we have a seniority system in place. And this is, you know, we have a seniority system. Mary, you started work a week later than Joe, or whatever about the seniority, that they can sort of objectively say you're not in that exact same place as him. Sorry, you lose. And this is accepted, consistent. Very few cases are litigated on that issue. Merit system, systematic and objective merit-based system. So an employer could say, you know what? What are you talking about? We give tests. We have 360 evaluations,
and there are sales goals.
Exactly, metrics that we use
to measure,
and maybe our metrics are our metrics, but we can show that Mary, she's just not cutting it the same exact way Joe is, so we're paying her substantially less. We have another defense, a system measuring earnings that qualitatively and quantitatively suggest a uniformity. They're objective and non-discriminatory, whatever that means. A system measuring earnings. So
what does that mean?
I don't know what it means. It means that...
Seriously,
right,
system measuring earnings?
We'll come back to it. I'll just go to the actual language of it in a moment. This was not...
Right.
This was mine. But again, the point is it's a dense, difficult burden
right.
to prove. And the fourth, and here's the big one. The first
right.
three are sort of easier to handle for employers, and they're easier for employees to say, okay, I get it. Here's the fourth one, which is the catch-all sort of, you know, your free get-out-of-jail card for an employer. A differential based, this is what they would say, this is not about your sex. A differential based on any other factor other than sex. A differential based on any other factor other than sex. So in other words, if they say, well, you know what, this had nothing to do with, we're not paying her less because she's a woman.
We just don't like her.
Well, we just don't, that's right, we don't like her. Or she's not tall enough. Or whatever, any other factor that doesn't seem to be related to sex, but very well may be.
Right.
And they don't have to really work very hard. It's similar to when one is picking a jury. I used to be a criminal lawyer. And when you're picking in this country, everywhere in this country, if you're being it so sort of racially, you know, the racial divisiveness of our criminal justice system, at least on the lower levels, if you have a person of color who's a defendant and you're picking a jury in, you know, let's say in New York City where they're going to be people of both races, the district attorney, the prosecutor, uniformly, regularly looks to boot off the jury people of color. I mean, this is also not in controversy. Generally speaking, you want to boot the people who you think might be sympathetic to the defendant, and you're going to get rid of black people. You know, and it's, again, it's thinly veiled. They do it all the time. But what they can't do is say, we're bumping you because you're black. So they come up with another reason. Your Uncle Bill was arrested 10 years ago, and you're going to be sympathetic to the defendant because your uncle was arrested. Or anything else that has nothing to do with your race, but it's a huge stretch usually. It's something like, well, his mother works in the jail system, or whatever. And if the judge disallows it and says, that's ridiculous. This person can be fair. It has nothing to do with that nonsense. I'm going to put him back on the jury. But they constantly try, and they're often successful. That's what this number four in the Equal Pay Act, it's a catch-all that allows an employer to just say, this is nothing. You think this matters because she's a woman? We hired her. She was a woman. But she doesn't, and again, fill in the blank with anything else. But they don't have to prove that it's really not tied to. It's not a proxy for a gender-based decision. And so it's very, very difficult. And here's the reason why the Equal Pay Act, as it stood for all these years until 2009, was useless. And useless to us in practice as practicing lawyers is that the law said that you have to, within 180 days of determining that you are being paid less than men, you got to file with the, you got to file a complaint, file with the EEOC, or file with your local, you have to file. The problem is, who knows that they're being paid less within 180 days?
Well, who can prove it? Well, you can feel it.
You
can think it.
Right.
But you have to be able to prove it.
The burden is on you, but actually, it makes it even worse than not only when you knowing it, you have to actually file within 180 days of the when you were paid less than a man for equal work. So again,
If you're fired, you have 180 days from the day you're fired.
No, forget fired. This is if you and I are working together in a place and you're not fired, we have the same job, and you're making $10,000 less per year than I am. I'm not telling you how much I earn. You're not able to find out how much I earn anywhere. So you find out 8 years later or 3 years later. Meanwhile, your responsibility was to file a complaint within 180 days, 6 months of your first paycheck when you were illegally paid. You would have to be a magician. You wouldn't know that. So that's what happened to Lily Ledbetter. I don't know, everyone, people know this. She worked in a Goodyear tire plant in Alabama since 1978. Started out making a crummy salary like everyone else. Over the course of her, I don't know how many years, 18 years, 16 years she worked there. Every year that she worked, and that's part of I think what we'll talk about today, that it expanded over the time, this subtle, sometimes subtle, wage differential grew. And by the time she said, hey, I don't remember how she found out, but she found out she was earning 40% less than the lowest paid man doing the same job. And she sued. And it was a long, long battle up and down the court food chain. Finally, a jury trial, $3-something million the jury gave her for the discrimination, the equal pay violation, the sex harassment,
right?
All of it goes up to the
and they appeal it.
And they appeal it, right, to the Court of Appeals and ultimately to the United States Supreme Court that famously said in a 5-4 decision, the same five sort of right-wing wackadoodle men that never find for individual human beings or never sort of do the right thing found that, you know what, you get nothing, young lady, you get nothing. You don't get that $3 million. You don't get 2 cents, which you never got. You don't get it because you didn't file within 180 days, hit the bricks, babe. Done. That was it. And, you know, the Ruth Bader Ginsburg and the dissent went wild and said, you know, this is outright misogyny. She didn't say that. I'm saying that. But it's just crazy. You obviously don't want to allow this sort of injustice to be corrected. And that's what they did. So what President Obama did on his first bill, his first law, was sign the Lilly Ledbetter Act. And really what Lilly Ledbetter Act does is get rid of this 180-day problem by saying that you will have 180 days to file after you first find out that you discover, and you may discover it 16 years after you start. And that was a big deal in a lot of ways, but it didn't go anywhere near far enough because you still had all these same defenses, including this fourth one that says a differential based on any other factor other than sex, this catch-all. So the Paycheck Fairness Act, which just passed in New York City, a version of it, and then the federal one, which would cover all of us, all the women in your lives, everybody who's listening, just got booted down again. How many years in a row? I don't know, 5 years in a row that it's been proposed. Was, again, every Republican voted against it. And that, the Paycheck Fairness Act, would have gone a long way towards remedying that. Issues of transparency, issues of talking about pay, issues of asking your employer, how much does Joe make? How much do I make? Where's the list?
Right.
But again, why should, as Barbara Mikulski just said, if the law says, which it already says, they're always saying, well, we already have that. If it already says you can't discriminate against women, and if it already says you have to pay women, and that's the spirit and intent of the law. If it already says you have to pay women,
why shouldn't they be making this information available?
Right,
what are they hiding?
What are they hiding? Right. Why are they having a temper tantrum still?
Exactly.
Right. Well, we know the answer is that they don't care about women. The answer is they care about the Chamber of Commerce, and they care about their donors. And the donors say, we don't want women to make more money. We don't want anybody to make more money.
We don't want anybody to make any more money.
Right. We don't want to give people unemployment. We don't want to raise the minimum wage. We want people to suffer and get their own health insurance and be free, freedom, free to live under a bridge. That's freedom, if that's what it takes. But, I don't understand it. And, look, we all know, I was at a relative's house for a funeral-related event, and an aunt of mine who's in her 60s, somebody made some comment about the Paycheck Fairness Act, and she just said something like, I'm not talking politics here now, I'm a Republican, and, I'm not talking politics because you're all going to get me upset. And I said something sort of lightly to her about, you're not for Paycheck Fairness. She says, I'm not talking about it here, and I'm a Republican, and it really gets me upset, and she sort of stormed off. And so again, it's sort of like, what do we do? And I don't know what, she wasn't ready to talk about it. I don't know why. I don't think if you actually sat her down and asked her, are you really against equal pay?
Well, so my experience last week with Equal Pay Day, I was wearing my red on Tuesday, and certainly the day before, on Monday, I was speaking to everyone I encountered. Tomorrow, Equal Pay Day, do you know what that's about? Do you know what it means? Do you know why we need it? All day Tuesday and Wednesday, yesterday was. And what I was so struck by, maybe I didn't mention it to you, but what I was so struck by were the people who were unaware that it even was Equal Pay Day, and why do we need it, and what is the purpose, and is this just another one of your things that you get so upset about? And then as I began to explain to each person, but do you understand, and the discrimination is somewhat subtle. And it happens in various different ways, but that's why I thought it was very important that, in light of, the comment you got yesterday, to bring this up, because clearly people are being confronted with, oh, we have enough laws, oh, we don't need that, that's not true, look at this study and this study that says, there is no disparity. But the fact is, there's a lot more out there. And there are a lot more people who are calling our office that are experiencing this.
Well, there
and I certainly even know in my own life I was not paid as much.
Right.
And but you couldn't talk about it.
Okay, the jury
women would talk to women. How much are you making? How much do you make? But you couldn't get a man in the same office to fess up.
Well, you couldn't get a man.
And they
to,
were all making more.
Right, they're all making more. Look, the jury is back. The jury's in. The science is in on this. This isn't like, you know, you mentioned the census or some, you know, a talking head can come on Fox so-called news and say, oh, women are making more than equal to men. It's all nonsense they make. Look at my, you know, my cousin Renee. She's making as much as... And occasionally, I think pharmacists, for instance, was the one profession that... Pretty. That's now it's at 100%. Whether it's because every pharmacist works for a corporation like CBS Rite Aid, and that's what they pay them all the same, you know that. So if you're a pharmacist, or you're a female pharmacist, you're likely making as much as the male pharmacist standing next to you in the CBS. But still, in all, the just like climate change, they could say the same thing. There are some nuts out there, 3% of so-called climatologists that are paid by. You know, the Koch brothers or some other, right-wing institute whose mission is to debunk actual science to keep oil production going.
Well, the fear is what they were saying is, this will just open the floodgates for lawyers.
Right, but again, that's such an enormous distraction.
Well, of course.
This whole trial lawyers thing always was.
Let's talk about some of the reasons why we do need this. You know, the hole in the law, what it doesn't cover, what this law should cover, what needs to be covered.
Well, again, we mentioned before, if the idea is to actually make gender pay disparity a thing of the past so that women might... You know what? I have two daughters. You have children, Deb?
Two daughters.
Two daughters as well. We have two daughters. You have two daughters that, we agree that... I can tell you, I don't want to think that my own kids, and I'm sure you feel the same way about your kids, I don't want to think that my daughters... are earning less than someone that I have to subsidize them because they're not making as much as the guy next to them, and that if I had sons, that they would have more value, human capital would be, greater. It bothers me, it's always bothered me, that for some reason their value is diminished vis-a-vis the way the world sees them. And it's not, there are a number, yes, they, there's the pink ghetto and there are some choice involved with it, and you could hear Phyllis Schlafly talk about other reasons why women that might not be outright discrimination choose to earn less, and there are those women that would say, well, you know what, I want to be home with my kids, I want that flexibility, I understand that, but we should provide that flexibility for women and men. And make that gender neutral anyway.
Well, that's the piece that is not talked about.
Right.
And that's the piece that makes this whole topic so politicized. And it actually distracts from the core issue. Yes, becoming a parent negatively impacts women. It does not negatively impact men. You know, when a man decides to become a father,
Why not?
Well, first of all, men rarely take time off to recover or bond with their baby, so they're not taking off the same amount of time from work. And studies show that employers tend to hire women who have no children versus women who have children.
Mm-hmm.
That there is this is true. There's another HR study that is men and women that a lot of this is unconscious discrimination in mm-hmm. part. But as far as when a guy becomes a father, when a man becomes a father, he is actually looked at, he is viewed as more valuable because he's got to work harder. He's got kids to support. Mm-hmm. Whereas a single, fatherless man, he could just come and go and he only has to care about himself. So a man does not experience the same discrimination as women do. So as a society... Unless we want women to stop having babies,
mm-hmm.
in which case we're going to have to figure out how men can do it, then as a society, because there is that penalty, that cost, you are out of work. I don't care how fast you can come back, but right. You are out of work for a little while. The way society is set up, yeah, ideally, our society is set up. Yeah, a lot of women would like to stay home for the first few years or be able to spend more time at home giving their children a better... I know I started a job share where I worked. I wanted to give my kids the first 5-8 years a real solid foundation. There was a cost to doing that, not only financially, but career-wise. I was not viewed as on the fast track anymore.
Right, you're on the mommy track.
Exactly. So, and other women tend to pick those kinds of fields that offer a little more flexibility because they are the primary giver, caregiver. Kids do get sick. Men, very often, are not the ones who are
running
home.
Why are they the primary caregiver? Who says they're the primary caregiver?
Well, because this is just this is basically how society goes. Men, you know, we have a client right now. She's got a set of 1.5-year-old twins and a 4-year-old. She's home taking care of 3 babies, essentially, and he's working 3 jobs.
Right.
So, and that tends to be, for right now, while she's still got a husband who's supporting, because so many men, you know, marriages don't last, men move on. Men are not held to the same standard of showing up and having to be responsible for those kids. So the burden tends to fall on women.
Right. But the shoe, of course, could be on the other foot. There's nothing
about... Okay, but the way society is right now, there is a penalty for becoming a parent to a woman. Mm-hmm. You leave the job market for X number of years, even if it's just 5. So you now, the same guy you were comparable to, he's now had 5 more years of experience, 5 more years of developing relationships, 5 more years of networking.
Right.
I'm starting all over again.
Right.
So I'm making less, so therefore over my lifetime. So, and again, I don't think it's such a simple answer, but if we're going to say family, children, as a society, it takes a village, well, we need those support structures in place so women have that same opportunity.
Right. Well, the support structures are always what the other side is railing against in terms of, it's like regulating industry so that it could do its thing.
We don't need that.
Kill us and pollute.
Exactly.
And maybe they'll pay their own taxes and so forth. There'll be some regulation. So we you know, listen, it was in our lifetime, you and I, that we saw in the paper, we were adults when they were still advertising for jobs for women and men.
Right.
They were still men only and women only. And, you know, the women only jobs were the jobs that the employer thought these are sort of girl jobs.
Right.
And we don't want...
Well, after World War II even, men leave the factories, women come in, they were paid less than men, and of course, as soon as the war's over, get these women out of here, and we have to start paying men exact same job, family wages, because they have to support a family.
But again, the stuff that's acculturated, it's like in the, you know, the show Mad Men. Again, what was this? Also just in the 60s, but we all watch that and say, look, you've got the men, the earner, the alpha boy, the big swinging you-know-what, and the sort of more subservient, supportive girl.
Well, you know what? And again, that is a cost men pay in society
right now, too.
Because men feel... You know, a lot of men, not all, but a lot of men feel I'm going to have to, you know, if I want to have kids and a family, I'm going to have to be able to support all these people and probably a second family because, you know, they'll get divorced and he'll have 2 families. So he thinks about getting a job, that the pressure of having a job that pays enough money. So he... can't. He might want to have been a teacher. He might really want to be a social worker.
Right.
But doesn't, because he falls into that, I need to make money because that's how I'll be seen as successful. This is how I'll attract women. This is how I'll be able to support my family.
Right.
And it does a disservice to men in that regard as well.
Well, sure it does. Well, I mean, inequality hurt, you know, hurts those who are the oppressed and the oppressor. It sort of becomes that two sides of the coin. And again, if women are not permitted to earn what they're worth, to fulfill, again, most men would say, you know, if my I'd be happy to stay home and shoulder some of the burden if my wife could go out and earn the kind of money and allow me. Some men would say that. If we can have the parity of income, I don't want to have to go kill myself, but men are expected to go out and bring home the bacon. In my lifetime,
well, is changing a little bit now. There are, you know, this economy has caused a lot of men to stay home, and women have gone out and are the...
They've been forced to stay home. Right,
yeah.
Right. But there are still, again, it wasn't very long ago where women who would actually go and negotiate, and it is important, I think, in fact, we have... is it next week that Ruth Raysfeld will be
yeah.
with? We have next week our guest is a prominent attorney and mediator and arbitrator, Ruth Raysfeld, who will talk to us about the benefits of alternative dispute resolution of employment situations as opposed to litigation. Because you know what? Most of these things, when people read about what it takes to go forward, like the lawyers, you know, when they talk about this is a bonanza for lawyers and trial lawyers are going to make all kinds of money. It's a huge red herring, a huge
right.
canard. It's a distraction. Lawyers aren't not making the money. How many cases go to trial where lawyers make the money? It's like a tiny, maybe a fraction of 1%. 99.99%
right.
of cases either, you know, settle early on or they're dismissed, you know, entirely. This isn't about lawyers. This is especially not lawyers in employment law. It's one thing maybe when you talk about trial lawyers for big, you know, plaintiffs, asbestos cases or you know, personal injury cases. This is about equality, and this is about the family, and this is about, for most of us, getting more, rescuing some of that money, the 99.99% that went to the top 0.1% over
right.
the last 20 years, and getting some of it back into our hands. And this is one way, through basic, simple fairness of women earning what they're worth, that's all. You know,
it could be resolved. If employers provided the data,
right,
it could end this whole thing.
Right, right.
Because it's like in the absence of the answer, people make up their own
right.
answers.
Exactly.
You know, in absence of the facts, they make up their own answers. So employers, quite honestly, could put this whole, kibosh this whole thing
right, right.
by just saying, okay,
right.
and by providing that information.
Right. Well, the employers, because in our world of sort of private sector, bottom line, profit-based motives, you do need the help of the overseer, which is the government saying what is or isn't right. You could still make your profit, but how about we do the right thing? Employers have not, most of them haven't chosen. You could, some do, some
right.
do, right? Some cooperative workplaces and some pay women comparable
well,
to men.
Places like, which was very, very progressive in its time, Ben and Jerry's, when
right.
they started the ice cream,
right.
it was a 1-to-5 ratio,
mm-hmm.
and the CEOs, them, could not make more, they could only make 5 times as much
the
as the
paid.
Lowest paid.
I think it's the highest paid, no?
Yeah, 5 times what the lowest person was making.
The lowest person.
So if they wanted to make more money, they had to keep
exactly.
moving the
exactly.
bar up.
Can you imagine?
Which, you
right.
know.
right.
Like, that's one thing. And I can understand a lot of people having a lot of backlash about that. But it, again, it's, you're going to bust your butt for me. I'm going to, it's just like profit sharing used to be. I worked for a company for 20 years. Profit sharing. I didn't mind working the hours that I did because I was paid. I was invested in their success. As soon as they go public, they do away with all of that because they don't want to be paying out any profit
right.
to workers who they ultimately paid off all of the higher wage people and kept everybody with new packages.
Right.
I mean, screwed them. But you know what I really think would be helpful to talk about is what some of the reasons are why this actually goes on. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, why this pay disparity exists. And not does it exist because it does, but it's that subtle nature. It's the things that, it's like what you were talking about, you know, the miscellaneous factor that we did it because of whatever they want to make up that had nothing to do with it being a woman. And there are two women, Rosalind Barnett and Carol Rivers, who have recently published a book, The New Soft War on Women, How the Myth of Female Ascendance is Hurting Men, Hurting Women, Men, and Our Economy. And what they talk about, what they did for 3 years, one of them did all the research on all the research that's been done. Because what we tend to hear in the media is a nugget here and a nugget there. And then they blow it out of proportion. Mm-hmm. Or they misrepresent what it's actually right. saying. So one of the women just investigated and studied all the studies. And the other one looked into how women are represented in the media and, in society. So what they've really came to say in this book is that they make the invisible visible. And that the bias nature of the pay disparity is much more subtle. But some of the research that I hadn't seen that they found by very credible sources, such as when men and women work together on a project, men get more credit. This was an NYU study in 2005. Mm-hmm. Women and men are promoted. Oh, women are promoted on performance, men on potential or promise. That was a McKinsey 2011, right. which I thought really says a lot and certainly speaks to my experience being in sales and marketing forever. Mothers are seen as less committed to work than childless women, while fathers are more likely to be promoted than childless men. And that was a Cornell study in 2005.
Was this the gender-neutral study where they picked the men with less qualifications?
No, no, no. I'm going to get into that. That's the math and science study. So what does it make it into the mainstream is often more hype than substance, Rivers and Barnett say, as authors cherry-pick data to craft the juiciest, most buzzworthy stories. What doesn't get mentioned often, they say, wait a minute, citing two economists, is that this figure is largely made up of low-income families and includes women who earn as little as $1 more. And what they're talking about is this other book, 2012, The Richer Sex, How the New Majority of Female Breadwinners is Transforming our Culture, by this journalist Liza Mundy, who cites the Labor Department data, showing 38% of working women earn more than their spouses, including laid-off husbands, up from 24% in 1987. And that figure itself is so misleading because it's made up of largely low-income,
whose
husbands aren't working, but they are not making enough money to live themselves.
Right.
So they are on assistance and every other thing. So there was one other. So there was this study they also point up. So here you have this hype going out about how we don't need this law and women are doing so much better now. This is crazy. And all of those right out of college kind of studies. So there was a study done in Australia. When men see these statistics of how women are making all of these gains in leadership and education and work and money, they feel extremely anxious. Okay, mm-hmm, this mm-hmm, must be sure. some sort of, brings up all their anxiety. When women read these same statistics, they think their status has improved and are less likely to identify with other women, and they become more complacent. So here you have anxious men and complacent women.
Not a good recipe.
Right, so the upshot. So I want to just say this one other, what you were referring to, the math and science study.
Right.
This was, and I just want to see if I can find this really quickly. Yeah. So this was some study, the results of which came out during Women's History Month. We may have mentioned it during March. But it was reported. It was findings published in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences. Okay? New York Times reported on it. Wall Street Journal reported on it.
Right.
It's showing how, quote, an unconscious bias in hiring managers can influence them to choose men over women, even when women perform equally well or better on tests and speak honestly about their skills. And what this did, when you read the whole thing, women... This is math and science. You either know how to add the columns of numbers or you don't. It's not. It's black and white. It's not sales where there's nuance.
Right.
Or
subjectivity.
Exactly. Women's scores on the tests and their resumes, where they went to school, what they studied.
Right.
Men's scores on the test, their resumes, where their experience, etc. Completely neutral. Consistently, when they were hidden...
They transposed the names. Exactly. The genders.
They consistently hired underperforming men in these positions than hiring the women. Because...
They
and
were
this
boys.
Was, men and women did this.
Right.
Because of this unconscious bias.
It's baked into the cake already. It's
well,
not, right? I mean,
exactly.
It's part of our...
The other important thing, and this is what I hope we talk about with Ruth next week as well. So when men, and this was in this same study, men, when given the opportunity to sit in front of the HR person, so now this was really a study about the HR people, not the interviewee, men would boast about, brag about their experience. And exaggerate. Women would tell the truth and more underplayed their experience. Well, of course I went to Princeton. Well, of course I went to wherever. Men bragging, men boasting about their experience was viewed as a positive, where the women, if they did it, it was perceived as a negative.
Right.
So when all of this backlash, all of this comment that we heard, women have to learn to negotiate better. Women need to speak up for themselves. Well, they should just ask for more money.
Right.
The fact is, they're seen as a bitch.
Right.
They're seen as, you know, a negative
right.
when women are aggressive like that.
Right.
And we see it with, you know, the whole thing that prompted Barbara to, the, you know, the thing you quoted today came from Barbara Boxer talking about being very emotional about this the CIA thing
right.
prior to that.
Right, right. Well, you can't win. You know, if you're a woman, you're darned if you do, and you're darned if you don't. And listen, I've often quoted Shirley Chisholm. You know, Shirley Chisholm famously the first.
Right.
The first woman of color elected to the United States House of Representatives, who I believe was born in the South in the 19-teens or 20s, famously said, "Of my two handicaps," this is a quote, "of my two handicaps, being female put many more obstacles in my path than being black."
Right.
And I've heard her speak more on that. She says, listen, I grew up in the South in the 20s. I know racism, okay? I understand it. But it ain't nothing. It pales compared to what I deal with every day as a woman in the, you know, in the halls of Congress.
And that's why women of color make even less.
That's right, much less.
Hispanic and black women make even less, are treated worse, and are really... should be, you know, the angry black woman. I mean, it's
right,
really,
right.
They should feel that way.
Right, exactly. It's unbelievable. You know, speaking of, who said this? Here's a quote. I like this quote. "What happened to me is not only an insult to my dignity, but it had real consequences for my ability to care for my family. Every paycheck I received, I got less than what I was entitled to under the law. The Supreme Court said this didn't count as illegal discrimination. But it sure feels like discrimination when you're on the receiving end of that smaller paycheck and trying to support your family with less money than the men are getting for doing the same job. And according to the court, if you don't figure things out right away, the company can treat you like a second-class citizen for the rest of your career. That isn't right." That was Lilly Ledbetter. And, you know, beautifully put. But, I mean, who among us really can argue with that? And, again, when it just comes down to putting food on our families' tables...
Because it impacts so many things. Women get out of college, men and women get out of college, $20,000 worth of debt of college loans. Women start out making 82%. Right. And that's the best studies.
Right.
They're already making less. So they've got less money to pay back the student loans.
Mm-hmm. Right. Of
so
course.
It's like they're
snowballs.
And disadvantaged. And then, you know, when you add that parent thing.
So the average still today, right here in April 2014, women, the average pay differential is women earn 77 cents for every $1 that men make, but that's the average. Across the country, it's different in states. I'm looking at a list of, just see where your state comes out. I'll just by obviously reading 50 states, but the most equal is Washington, D.C., where women are still earn only 90% of what men doing the same work earn. And the top five, Maryland, Nevada, Vermont, New York, and California, the top six. And it goes from 90% down in California to 84%. The worst states with regard to women's earning abilities relative to men are Wyoming, comes in at a paltry 64%, so that where men make $51,932 for a job, a woman earns $33,000 to a man's $51,000. Next up, Louisiana at 67%, West Virginia at 70%, Utah at 70%, Alabama at 71%, etc. So in every state, the best that women can do still in the seat of our government is still 9/10 of what a boy makes for doing, you know, the exact same work.
And they can say, as I heard, well, it's only 7%. It's only 5%.
Take it out of your money, Congressman.
Yeah, exactly.
Take it out of your salary.
Yeah.
Which, of course, they would never, you know, agree to do. Look, go ahead.
Well, the other thing I was going to say, when we talk about the penalty that women experience, and again, it's not to complain. This is an issue that needs some compromise to figure out how to resolve. That women
compromise?
Have. Well, I know that, you know, Congress,
right.
Forget about it. But the point is, why? What about the caregivers? You know, home health workers, caring for the elderly. These are people who are paid nothing.
Right. So that's the first problem. It's not about equal pay. I mean, they're all interrelated in terms of what living
but
wage.
But what we value.
But we don't. I mean, we're not, you know.
This is what they're saying. Men will go into law and finance because, you know, it's higher risk. Iron workers, you know, climbing bridges will pay more, too, because, you know, all of the, most of the 90-something percent of all the work, the deaths that happen at work are men. So they take all of these risks. What does that say about what we value?
Well, what is
finance
it?
And right. Bridges?
Right. Well,
and
I mean,
not caring for the elderly, the sick.
Well, what does it say about what we value when we pay a hedge fund manager in New York City $2 billion a year, which is close to $1 million an hour? Let me say that again. There are 50 hedge fund managers in New York that earn $2 billion a year. Earn is not the right word. That just pull down, that basically skim off the
collect.
Top, that steal, that collect $2 billion
every
a year.
Every time they
hold
pass go.
Well, they, each year, which is $900,000 an hour, like on a 40-hour week. That's what they're making, $1 million an hour compared to your $7.25.
Which they don't want to pay you 10.
And they're paying, this is all carried interest since, you know, since this was, I think, just since W's, you know, after Reagan, this was W's tax change, was that they pay 15% on that. The effective tax rate versus 36% to, let's say, the surgeon who makes a mere $400,000 a year. So we obviously value them more than the teacher earning $50,000 a year who is molding our kids' souls and futures. I mean,
right.
But then again, talking about what we value, this is a country, I forgot her name, unfortunately, Carla Dill, maybe, who a couple of weeks ago died. In Florida, 32-year-old mother of three,
yes.
Who died, a hardworking, took three jobs
right.
to support her kids, a single mother.
No one is quite
a good person, moved to Florida to support her, found out she had a heart condition and could not could not afford the meds that would have kept her alive. Why? Because of the red state donut hole. These like this, like Rick Scott, who killed her, the governor of Florida, all these governors, they would not. She made too much money to qualify for Medicaid, but she made $400 too little for the ACA, the Obamacare subsidies. So she died because she couldn't get health care. And what country do we, I mean, we're nuts. We choose to say that that's important, that we're going to put money to subsidies for still for oil companies and to, you know, the farm industry that we haven't needed for 90 years, and not allow the very most vulnerable among us, who really, again, are just our brothers and sisters, to stay alive.
Right.
So, I mean, you know, it's all connected, obviously. This is all the same thing. We're talking about equal pay for women, the minimum wage, allowing people to collect unemployment when they're not. We're allowing people some safety net so that they don't have to. You get one illness in the family and you have to go bankrupt and, you know, and die as it used to be before the 1930s, you know, and before the Great Society in the 60s and before the New Deal of the 30s. Mm-hmm. I mean, people died in you know, you got old and you died, you know, homeless and sick. You died in poverty, and there wasn't any safety net. I know even my parents right now would not be without Social Security, and even these, you know, the Tea Partiers that say no government and no, and Barack Obama is awful, he's a socialist, but don't touch my Medicare, don't touch my Medicaid,
or Social
of course,
Security.
Or Social Security, even though that's exactly the agenda of you know, the big money that is calling the shots, and Shelley Adelson and all of those that are really driving the politics now, that are dividing all of us and sort of sending us to heck in a handcart. We have only a minute or two left.
Oh, my gosh, that went so fast.
I just wanted to mention that we will have on our show...
Well, I want to say first, nobody called in with a bill in the last 8 years.
I know you're all hiding out there. We have many listeners. You have nothing to say, although most of our listeners are progressive types that wouldn't come up with one of those bills that Republicans... that don't exist. We have on May 19th, we will have Professor David Yamada, who will be dropping by to chat with us about workplace bullying. It's a big issue. Professor Yamada is the founder of the New Workplace Institute, and he's an esteemed full professor of law at Suffolk University Law School in Boston. He is an internationally recognized authority on workplace bullying. Ever been bullied in the workplace? You know that there's really no law against that.
I know.
Is there a law against workplace bullying that we're aware of? There are no laws yet against workplace bullying and psychologically abusive work environments. He has written leading analyses of workplace bullying and interpersonal mistreatment at work, and he's the author of The Healthy Workplace Bill. Can you imagine? Such a thing does exist, which is model anti-bullying legislation that has been the basis of bills introduced, not passed, but introduced in over two dozen state legislatures since 2003. So tune in to PRN.FM, the Women's Rights in the Workplace show on May 19th at 5 p.m.
That's
Eastern
gonna be a
time.
Really good one.
That's going to be really exciting. Don't miss it. And is it next week again we have on Ruth Raisfeld?
Yes.
Who I mentioned is a prominent attorney, mediator, arbitrator, and also she don't want to miss her tips, negotiating tips for women, because Ruth does believe that women are sometimes complicit in their own struggles in the workplace. And while we might have a nice healthy debate on this, she believes that women need to be a little more proactive, as men are, in terms of demanding what they're worth and asking for it. And women, I think, notoriously often do not do that. So this is Jack Tuckner from Tuckner, Sipser, Weinstock & Sipser, and Deborah O'Rell, the Women's Rights in the Workplace Advocates, with you, honored to be with you, signing off until next week. I hope you all have a strong and powerful week, and don't quit.
Right.